Okay. Morning. Today's daf Mavmetzia is Mem Dalet. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship. The daf is on the Zech and the Shemaz Liba Gavriela Bashmuel. We start today at the two dots on Mem Gimel Medbez with the words Rabbi Akiva Amar Kishas HaTviya. We're coming off of Mishnah. We're finishing off the Mishnah. About somebody sholeich yad. So you were deposited an object by you, entrusted to watch the object, and then what do? You fall in love with the object. you grow an attachment to the object, and then you take it. So that is, it's a form of geneva, it's a form of stealing. And the Torah's terminology to describe it is what's called shlichus yad. The moment you're mishaleich yad, the moment you make the decision that it's going to be yours, well, that's inaccurate, and you'll see why I say that. That's coming up in the very next Mishnah. So let me correct myself immediately. We'll talk about when exactly you're mishaleich yad. That's the upcoming Mishnah. But when you are mishaleich yad, so then you are obviously going to be on the hook for the whole item, and you're going to have to pay for the whole item based on what value. So if you have the item still, so you don't have to worry about value, as we discussed back in the Mishnah, you return the item to the person, and regardless of whether it fluctuated, appreciated up, depreciated down, doesn't matter. Hareisha chalafanecha. Here you are. I'm ready to make amends. But if you don't have the item anymore, and now you're assessing how much the item would have been, so how is that going to be assessed? So, in the Mishnah, there were three opinions. Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, and Rabbi Akiva. Beis Shammai says that we hit the Shomer with Yeser V'Chaser. In other words, if it appreciated, he has to make up the difference. He has to pay that extra. If it depreciated, he has to make up the difference. Meaning, according to Beis Shammai, basically, you hit him. In fact, when I say you hit him, I mean it, obviously not literally, but the Mishnah's terminology is also using that same expression, yilakalo. In other words, you hit him. You financially hit the person. Beis Hillel says, Kishas Otsa, according to Beis Hillel. Now, we took us a little bit to figure out what Beis Hillel said. The Gemara had a number of suggestions, but the Gemara concluded that what Beis Hillel means when he says Kishas Otsa is meaning at the time when you took it from him. Meaning, Kol HaGazlanim Kishas HaGzela, when you're a Gazlan, you pay based on the time of the Gzela. So when you took it from him, admittedly, that's not the point of Gzela. The point of Gzela is later when you are Mishaleich Yad, but we go back to the point of Otsa in order in terms of assessing the appraised value of what you need to pay him. And finally, the third opinion, Rabbi Kiva Amar Kishas HaTviya, Rabbi Kiva goes to the time where he's Toveya you, where he demands the item back from you. And it's at that point in time where we make the assessment of how much the item would have currently been, and that's how it's going to be determined. Okay, of these three opinions, who does the halacha follow like? This is a little bit tricky, because over here, if it was just Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, that's easy. But over here, it's Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel and Rabbi Akiva. So, that makes it a little bit tricky. And this is a little bit of Gemara that we're going to be covering right now. Where is his Mesora? Meaning, we know that Rabbi Akiva, ultimately, his Mesora goes back to Beis Hillel. So, right. Fair question, and I don't have a good answer. Rabbi Akiva Amar Kishas HaTviya Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel Halachka Rabbi Akiva. So we start off with the Amoraim who take sides. So Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel says Halachas like Rabbi Akiva, Moda Rabbi Akiva, B'makom She'eish Eidim. However, Rabbi Akiva will make the following admission, and that is where there are witnesses. My time and Amar Kerala Sherhu Lo Yinenu B'Yamash Maso. You give it to him on the day of guilt. Now, if there are witnesses, Mahushaita, who de chayev lay ashama. Now, if witnesses come, so when is the day of guilt? The day of guilt is not when he comes forward and makes the admission, or not even makes the admission, but when there's a claim against him, and now he's being taken to court. But if there are witnesses, so obviously the witnesses are one who are establishing it, and the witnesses obviously saw him at an earlier time when he was actually mishaleich yad. So Amalei Rav Oshi Le Rav Yehuda Rabbi Ata Omer Kain Hachi. I'm Rav Asi. I'm Rav Yochanan Chalukah Rabbi Kiva Afilu B'Makom She'eish Eidim. So the Gemara says in the name of Rav Yochanan, you know that Rabbi Kiva, he disputed Beis Hillel even if there are witnesses. My time and Damer Kala Sher Hulo Yidena B'Yamash Maso U'Beidinu De'Mechayev Le'Ashama. And here in this in the second version of Rabbi Akiva, he's going to argue even if they're witnesses, because even when there are witnesses, it's not the witnesses that are creating your liability. Your liability is created by Beis Din. The witnesses are part and parcel. They are the mechanics of the Beis Din. But ultimately, it's the Beis Din that is causing you to pay. It's not the witnesses that are causing you to pay. So Rabbi Akiva will consistently say that when you're Mishaleich Yad, the time of assessment is going to be at the time of Hamada Bedin, when you are in court and found guilty. tilted by the court. So Rabbi Zera gives the following instructions to Rabbi Abba Bar Papa. When you go there, Akif Asalam the Surah, I want you to take a somewhat circuitous route. Go by, past the literally the ladder of Tzur, but probably the name of a place. And I want you to go pay a visit to Rabbi Yaakov Bar Idi, and basically what I want to know is the conclusion of this matter. In other words, simply tell me the halacha. So the Gemara says that this is what we said over in the name of Rav Yochanan, the halacha falls like Rabbi Akiva and la'olam. So my la'olam am Rav Ashi shlo tomar hani mi lehechad aleka edim. And when we says la'olam, it means even if there are witnesses, that's still not going to change Rabbi Akiva's viewpoint. So that's one possibility of what he meant la'olam, meaning Rabbi Akiva is consistent that you always pay bishah samad bedin. Another way of understanding la'olam is, let's say after the shomer was mishalech yad, he had a change of heart and he returned the lost item, but with one important detail that was left out, he never told the owner that he returned the item. So at that point in time, we know it's a we've seen this already a couple of times, machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel, whether you have to notify the nigna of the victim that you are returning it to him. Rabbi Shmuel says you don't, Rabbi Akiva says you do. So when Rabbi Yochanan says that the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva la'olam, also included in that is the idea that when you steal something and you return it back to the victim, you have to tell him that you returned it. And if you don't tell him that you returned it, it's not called chazara. You have not successfully returned it, and you're still going to be liable. Lafugim and Rabbi Yishmael, and this obviously excludes itself from the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael Damar, Labina das balim, kamashwan debina das balim. And in this regard, you also need to notify the owner. So now, where do we stand right now? We have a number of traditions coming to us from Rav Yochanan, the halacha follows like Rabbi Akiva. One cog that goes into this, that kind of upsets the halacha, and that is the last line of the Gemara. Rav Amar halacha kebeis halah, and Rav's position is that the halacha falls like beis halah. So we have three opinions in the Mishnah. For sure, the halacha is not like beis shammai, but between beis halah and Rabbi Akiva, who does the halacha fall like? So Rav Yochanan and Rav of the Amoraim dispute this very issue. Where do we stand on this issue? If you take a look at the last Rashi right before the Mishnah, Rashi writes, Rav Amar halacha kebeis halah kishas kezela va'anan kerava avdinan dehavalei basra. So Rashi says that we're going to be following Rava's position. Rava is later along. You know, this is an interesting formulation of how to determine halacha. Meaning, generally speaking, if the Gemara paskins, so we have no authority, right position to go against the Gemara. If the Shulchan Aruch paskins, same thing, same story as well. So, generally speaking, the earlier you are, the more closer you are to the Mesorah, and therefore, they have the final word. And meanwhile, on the other hand, you also see, like, here's a perfect example: Rav Yochanan's an early Amora, Rav is a later Amora, and so where do we stand in terms of the Pesach Halacha? We'll follow the later Amora rather than the earlier Amora. That's the idea of Basra, when you are a later Amora. So it's just, there's an interesting tension in terms of whether we side with the earlier generations or we side with the later generations. But the correct way to understand is that within the time period of the Amoraim, again, we obviously, it's easy for us to say this in retrospect. You know, you obviously they couldn't say this going forward, but in retrospect, in the period of the Amoraim, this idea of Basra obviously has a lot of weight. Okay. Hachoshev l'shloach yad b'pikadon b'sham ha'ormim chayv b'b'sol ha'ormim enu chayv ay shishalach bo yad. Okay. What our Mishnah is going to be discussing right now is, at what point precisely are you, the Shomer, now transitioning, making the poor transition from being a Shomer to being a thief? In other words, when can we identify you, label you as someone who is Mishalech Yad? So the Mishnah provides over here 2 points. And again, machlokes between Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beit Shammai says the point of thinking it. When you think, now I'll explain thinking better in just a moment, but when you think that this item now, I'm not really interested in returning it to the owner, I'd like to become the new owner, so the point of thought is going to be the point in which you are Mishalech Yad. Now, from this point going forward, you now are labeled as a Mishalech Yad, so you're a Gazlan. So once again, now, unless you change your ways, unless you do tshuva, Until you do tshuva, when I say tshuva over here, I mean return the item, and as we just concluded in the Gemara, notify the owner you're returning the item, you're going to be on the full liability of this item. And as we discussed a day ago, and we're going to say it again right now in just a moment, and even if you only take part of the item, once you're mishaleach yad, you're going to have full liability of the entire item. Okay, so the Mishnah says, according to Beit Shammai, it's the point of machshava, the point of thought. Now, we are not expected to be mind readers. Rashi over here writes, "Achoshev l'shalach yad amar b'fnei edim." So Rashi says that when we say he thought it, we have to know that he thought it, therefore there has to be articulation. But that's fine, meaning Beit Shammai's point is simply that you don't need an action. That's the key for Beit Shammai. You can be considered mishaleach yad prior to the action. Okay, so he describes that as thought. Rashi over here is just simply saying, we need to know how that thought is expressed. So he says it, and Rashi actually is even more detailed. Rashi says, "Amar b'fnei edim atol piktoni shaploni latmi." So he has to declare it in front of witnesses. When he declares it in front of witnesses, then he is considered a choshev. Then, according to Beit Shammai, he's considered mishaleach yad.
How come you can be a governor without taking it?
Wait, one just one at a time.
How come those witnesses don't give him hasra?
Again, this is not a question of. We're not talking about the point. We're just talking about.
You're going to tell me he's about to do something that's like against halacha. Why wouldn't they give him a strong say? You know, they shouldn't be doing this.
If they're good, I mean, which they are, they're Edom. But over here, we're not. The punishment isn't the critical. The focus of the Mishnah over here is not on the punishment. The focus of the Mishnah is on when exactly does he qualify as mishaleach yad. That's really the only thing the Mishnah here is describing. Right, if the witnesses are good people and they know that he's ready to accept the musar, they'll give him the musar. But and remember, the punishment over here is just simply returning the item. There's no, you know, it's not malchus, it's not, yeah.
But here you're saying machshava kemaaseh.
No, we're not saying machshava kemaaseh. We're saying that you are labeled a shaleach yad when you have the machshava. We're just talking about at what point in time now he moves from being a shomer to being a gazlan. And
is this similar, like the piggle or the?
You can make those comparisons. I mean, there are different areas of Torah. You can make those comparisons by piggle that we know in the beginning, beginning of Zvachim. So there's a machlokes exactly how machshava expresses itself. Is it a thought? Does he need articulation? There's Rashi over there in the beginning. Anyway, yes, you can make those comparisons. But over here, I don't know if you have to. In other words, the simple point is that for Shlichus Yad, well, I mean, the Gemara over here is going to quote Psukim specific to Shlichus Yad. So it could be that this is just a localized debate. Could be. Beisil takes the approach, which is no. He's only going to be considered Shlichus Yad when he actually is. I mean, the words really do speak to this idea. Mishaleach Yad, he sends his hands. Sends his hands, meaning he takes it. He actually physically takes the item. Then and only then, according to Beisil, is he Mishaleach Yad. And in the Mishnah, we have a pasuk that is a very strong support for Beisil. The Torah says that he is Shaleach. I mean, he actually physically manipulates the item. Now, we're talking more specifically about manipulation of the item. He tells a chavis v'natal him and a revias v'nishbar and a mashal and a revias. Now, if you just tilted the item over, interestingly enough, that is not considered shlichus yad. Because again, we're assuming like Beisel that you need a physical manipulation of the item, but more than that, you need a formal kinyan. Now, what does a formal kinyan require? So it requires mashicha. In this case, it would require hagbah. You have to physically pick the item up off the ground. So if you don't, so you just tilt the barrel over and you take a cup of wine from the barrel. So you're still a gazlan, but you're not mishaleach yad. And again, let's reiterate it one more time. The difference is as follows. When you're a gazlan, and if all you are just a gazlan, so then you're only going to be liable for a reimbursement of that which you took. Once you're mishaleach yad, you're going to be liable for the entire barrel, even though right now you only took a cup of the barrel. So here, it's a very technical point, but it results in a big distinction. If all you did was tilt the barrel, but you didn't lift the barrel up, so you are a gazlan on only that which you took, but you're not a mishaleach yad on the entire barrel. Ein mishalem el revias. He could be of a natal, hamen revias, and then the Mishnah gives us the contrast. If you pick the barrel up and you take a revias, v'nishbra mishalem demekula, then you have to pay for the entirety of the barrel. Menahani Mili, we're on the top of Memdala Madalaf. How do I know this meaning? What is the source of these positions that not? I'm sorry, Tan Rabban, the Gemara here quotes the Brisa. Called Davar Pesha Beisham Omrim Malamisha Chayval Machshava Kamaisa. When the Torah says Al Kol Davar Pesha or Devar Pesha, so then the Torah is telling us that it's basically over any amount of negligence, malfeasance. And that would include, according to Beit Shammai, and Machshava. Beit Zil, Armei Meno Chayav, Ashir Shalech, Boyad, and Beit Zil says, no. You need to Chuzet, Shinemarim, Lo Shalach, Yadom, and Melechas Reu. Now, we already knew from the Mishnah that that is the key pasuk, according to Beit Zil, but the Brisa over here is being more descriptive and giving us arguments for both Beit Shammai and Beit Zil. Amal, and Beit Shammai, Le Beit Zil, Valuk, Varnemar, Al Kol, Divar, Pesha. Yeah, but Beit Shammai says to Beit Zil, what are you going to do with the first half of the pasuk? So Beisol doesn't answer the question directly, just simply says, look, I have the pasuk that indicates that there has to be a physical manipulation. What the Al Kol Davar Pesha says, from Beisol to Beit Shammai, from their perspective, it's coming to teach us the following chiddush, and that is, our kol davar pesha is that, let's say I do not do the physical manipulation with the item, but I instruct another person to do it. In other words, a shliach. So, under those circumstances, the normal rules of the Torah is, ein shliach dvar avera. I can't assign somebody else to do an avera, and if he does it, that's not going to be on me, that's going to be on him. There is no transferring of an avera. That's the general rule. We discussed it in Kedushin. We discussed it earlier in Bav Metzia. And we know that to be so. What now we're learning together, we already learned this back in Kedushin. So if you remember the Gemara Kedushin over there, this is not a surprise, is that Shlichus Yad is one of the notable exceptions to this rule. That by Shlichus Yad, you can ask, instruct somebody else to do it, and you yourself now are going to be the one who is going to be liable for the action that you instructed somebody else to do, and you're going to be on the hook for the entire barrel, even though you instructed somebody else to do it. Parenthetically, by the way, Me'ilah is another exception, and there are
one more.
Yeah, there's right. There's one more. Me'ilah, shlichus yad, and tzvicha mechira, tavach u'machar. Right, you steal and then you shecht or you sell it. You can ask somebody else to shecht and you'll be chayv as well. Okay. Just as an interesting note, meaning that over here when the Torah describes misappropriation, the Torah says shlichus yad. So it's kind of embedded in the words themselves. Although this is not the source, it's not the proof, but it's just a good way to think about it. It's embedded in the words themselves that you can even assign somebody else to do it, and you yourself are going to be liable. Okay, so he says a chavis. We are talking now about tilting over the barrel. Am a rebel loshanu ela nishbara. Aval hichmitz meshalim is kula. Now, in terms of your liability, so it's only going to be when the barrel breaks. But if it sours or it spoils, so you're going to be paying all of it. Okay, now this is interesting. Okay, we are talking now not about when you tilt the barrel over, we're talking about where you we are talking about tilting the barrel over, and here's what the Gemara now is saying, is that by tilting the barrel over and not by picking it up, so you're only going to be liable on the part that you took. That's what we learned together in the Mishnah. And that's only going to be true if the barrel breaks. But if the barrel sours, so then mishalem is kula, then you're going to be liable for paying everything. Now why? Meaning you're not mishaleach yad, you didn't pick the barrel up, so why would you be chayv to pay for everything? So my time is. So the Gemara asks that very question. The Gemara's answer goes like this: Giri di dehu dahanule, because the barrel soured as a result of your action, causality. Meaning that because you took a little bit of wine out of the barrel, you created now an air pocket in the barrel.
That, huh? Is that grammar?
Yeah, that good. I was gonna go there. So you create an air pocket in the barrel. By you creating an air pocket in the barrel, so now you caused the barrel to sour as a result of that. And as a result of that, So you're going to be liable not only for the part that you took, but even the part that you did not take. Ben wonders. I wonder as well. So it's Ben squared in this case. So Ben wonders. So wait a second. That is... That's a little bit strange. Generally speaking, by nezik, by damages. So even though obviously causing damage is not good, it's not correct, it's aser. But nevertheless, in terms of financial liability, we generally say gramim nezik and putter. So that if you're a gram, you're going to be putter. So I didn't see anyone articulate the question as the. In fact, the you see Rashi. Rashi uses the term grama. However, and again, I'm not answering the question. I'm just simply pointing to the language of the Gemara. If you read the Gemara carefully, the Gemara says, "My taima gira diade." It's the arrow in your hand. Now, when you shoot an arrow, no, we've gone through Baba Kama. It's an obvious point, but we'll say it. When you shoot an arrow, nobody says, "Well, I didn't kill you, it was the arrow that killed you." Meaning you provided the force into the arrow, which directly caused whatever damage it is, bodily or property damage, either way. In other words, so when you shoot an arrow, that is clearly yours. What the Gemara is trying to communicate, now again, I'm not answering the question, but what the Gemara is trying to communicate is that this is not a case of grama, meaning that by you removing some of the wine from the barrel, causing the air to go into the barrel, it's gira diade. It's an arrow. It's like an arrow in your hands. Meaning, just like by an arrow, we would never describe that as grama. That is considered koach. That's considered an action directly attributable to you. So the same thing is over here. I would still say, even though, great, I pointed to the Gemara, and the Gemara's language is clear, but I would still say, though, that the question's strong, meaning, ultimately, the souring of the wine is something that was not directly caused by you, but it's indirect. So I do like the fact that the Gemara, you know, it subtly addresses the question, but it doesn't really answer the question. Okay. He tells a chavis, I'm sorry. He gvi of anato haymenu. Last section of the third parak of Baba Metzia. If you pick the barrel up, so now you're Mishaleach Yad, and at that point in time, you're going to be liable for the entire barrel. Amr Shmo lo nato nato ma, Mishalechem shigbi alito af apish lo nato lema, Amr Shere shlo nato. And Shmuel says, let's be very specific in terms of understanding the Mishnah. The Mishnah uses the word natal, which means you pick up the barrel and you took a little bit of wine out. Shmuel says, I know the Mishnah says that, but you don't have to go that far in order to be Mishaleach Yad. For Shlichus Yad, all you need to do is pick up the barrel and that's it. You now have done Hakbah, you were Kona the barrel, you're now going to be liable for the entirety of the barrel. Now, this has already been a number of times we've discussed this issue, and we get to discuss it one more time in the third parak of Bab Metzia. We remember Shlichus Yad. So we know you need a kinyan. Do you also need chisaron? Do you also need to diminish the value of the item in order to consider shlichus yad? So like we've been saying over the last number of days, it's a machlokas. Machlokas amarayim. So the Gemara says, Lema kasavr Shmuel shlichus yad and itzricha chisaron. Well, isn't Shmuel tipping his cap right now to which position he clearly is holding? Because Shmuel just said that by picking up the barrel, even if you don't take any of the wine, you are considered mishaleach yad. So it certainly sounds like Shmuel is having a very clear position. He has got a horse in this race. So I'm real low. So the Gemara says, not definitively. Could be that he argues that, but from this position, you don't know. Why? Because Shaniacha denichle de tehavi hachavis kula basis lahavrevias. So the Gemara says like this. Look, generally speaking, why do I need chisaron? Now I'm paraphrasing Rashi. Rashi doesn't say it exactly the way I'm saying it, just to, for full disclosure purposes. But I'm paraphrasing it, and this is the way I think of it, and not to say that I'm right. But generally speaking, why do you need chisaron? Why do I need to take some of it away or diminish some of its value? So the reason why is because you need very solid evidence that mishaleach yad, meaning I'm now, the item is already in my property. Because I'm the shomer. And now I'm turning from a shomer into a gazlan. So basically what I need is definitive proof that I've moved from the position of being a shomer to the position of being a gazlan. Where do we see that? It will be most clearly evident by the fact that I start taking some of it. Once I start taking some of it, it's almost impossible to argue anything else other than, yeah, I'm the thief. I've turned into a thief. But you see over here by the wine, it gets a little tricky. And this is what the Gemara now is arguing, not in defense of Shmuel, but to argue that for Shmuel, normally, normally you do need to take away some of the item, some of the value of the item. But by the wine, you don't have to. And the reason why is like this. Because right now, you want to take some of the wine. In fact, let's even say you don't want all the wine. Let's say you only want a reverse of the wine. But what happens if you take the wine out of the barrel? Wine's going to start going bad. Meaning, the wine is best kept and best preserved in the barrel itself. So maybe under normal circumstances, to be defined as a shliach yad, you have to take some of it away. Over here, you do want to take some of it away, but on the other hand, it preserves much better in the barrel. And that's what the Gemara means when the Gemara says, kulu basis laha revius. The barrel basically becomes the base for that revius. You want that wine to still be in the barrel, even though, at the same time, you want to misappropriate. You want to take the barrel to yourself. So over here, on one hand, you normally have to take it away. On the other hand, over here, it's better preserved in the barrel. Good. By Ravashi, he be arnikeli tol haymenu dinar mahu. Chamahu de la minter ala gav chamra. Avazuzi minter, odilma shanin tirasa darniki minterasa de dinar teku. Gemara asks a question and leaves it unresolved. Question basically goes like this. So now we made the argument that according to Shmuel, under normal circumstances, to be mishaleach yad, you have to take some of it out. But when it comes to the barrel of wine, you do want to take it out, but you want the wine to preserve. So therefore, by wine, he is going to argue that as long as you pick up the barrel, that's enough. What if it's what if somebody deposited by you a bag full of money, a purse of money? Okay, I'd call it a wallet, but we're dealing with coins. So some sort of purse. So somebody deposits you by a purse of money, and are we going to make the same argument over here? Now, it's kind of hard to make the same argument over here, and that's why the Gemara is grappling. Over here, what do you want to say? Coins preserve better when the one coin is still in the bag? Or, on the other hand, you can maybe make the argument, and the Gemara tries to do it, and I'm going to read the good language of the Gemara again. Odilma shani nitirasa da'arniki mitirusa da'dinar. You can better keep an eye of a coin that's together with all the other coins better than had you separated the coin from the bag. And to this argument, basically, look, your life is going to be more organized when things are more together. And so if I have coins scattered all over the place, it's hard to keep track. So the truth of the matter is that I want to misappropriate and I want to take the coins and really, to be mishaleach yad, you normally have to take a coin. But the counter pressure over here is, yeah, but I don't want to take the coin out of the bag, because if I do that, I'm going to have a hard time keeping track of it. So basically, can you make the same argument that we made by the cup of wine that we're going to make now by the single coin out of the purse teku? The Gemara leaves this question unresolved, and so we don't know. Hadron al-Chamavki, that is the end of the third parak of Bava Metzia. Okay. We have the good fortune this morning of starting the fourth parak of Bava Metzia. And before we start the fourth parak, just a word of introduction. Fourth and fifth parak of Bava Metzias are considered to be somewhat more difficult. Okay. The two of them are financially related. So if you got a good head for money, so all this will go well. I'm not saying I do, but that's the topics of the fourth and fifth parak. To give very quick summary statements, the fourth parak is talking about onah, it's talking about overcharging or undercharging for items. Fifth parak of Bamatzia is talking about ribis, is talking about charging. I'm sorry, lending money with interest. So those are the basic two topics of the fourth and the fifth parak. Our first sugya that we're going to be doing today is neither, but it's money related. So we are departing now. This is like section number two of Bava Metzia. Meaning, up until now, we talked about lost items and we talked about being a shomer. Now, first and second parak is about lost items. Third parak was about being a shomer. Now, as we move to the fourth parak, so we turn our attention to money and money matters. Okay, that is a macro look at where we are in Bava Metzia. Okay, now before we start with the Mishnah, let me just give a word of introduction. Okay, we're talking now about a transaction, a simple transaction where I'd like to buy something from you. So how does the transaction work? We agree to a price, I give you money, you give me the item, and the transaction is done. But let's slow that down a lot more, and let's realize what is really creating the transaction. So I think in our more modern way of thinking, right, and in the society and culture we're in, so we think that the money is what creates a transaction. And from the Torah standpoint, that is absolutely not the case. The money is not what is creating the transaction. Meaning that if you're selling me an item and we agree to a price and I give you the money, so from the Torah's viewpoint, I did not purchase the item yet. Now, even though I said that clearly, and I said that with a lot of confidence, the truth of the matter is that even that point is going to be even further subdivided. But for our purposes right now, that's all we need to hear for the time being. What we need to hear right now is that money is not what creates a transaction. What creates a transaction is the mocher, the seller, handing me the item. It could be after I give the money. It could be before I give the money. It doesn't matter. The moment that he hands me the item, that is the point of transaction. Now, if I paid him the money already, so that's great. So now he doesn't have to come run after me. If I didn't pay him the money yet, I owe him. Meaning I have a chov, I have now an outstanding obligation, and I need to pay. So generally speaking, by transactions, that'll happen momentarily. But it doesn't. From a halachic standpoint, it doesn't matter whether I give him the money right away or whether I give him the money at a later point in time. The transaction is complete and the transaction is finalized. And all this brings us to the following point, and that is chazara, retraction. At what point in time now can I retract from a transaction? So if what I'm saying is correct, which, as we'll see in just a moment, it is, hopefully I'm presenting it well, so that means that if I paid for an item and I didn't take the item yet, so now there can be a point of retraction. And as you'll see in our Mishnah, except for Rabbi Shimon, which will come up at the end of the Mishnah, so now either party can retract from the sale, because the sale hasn't been finalized. And even though, think of how far into the sale we are. We agreed to a price, I gave them the money. And then either one of us can say, nah, you know what? No. I got a better offer. I don't like you. Whatever. Whatever the excuse may be. Now, the Mishnah will make a comment about the ethics and morals, meaning that if we are so far into the transaction where I paid for the item, even though the halacha clearly recognizes that I didn't make a purchase yet, nevertheless, that's a pretty strong commitment. And backing out of such a verbal commitment, the Mishnah is going to make a comment about it's not right. It's not ethically right. You shouldn't back out of a verbal commitment, especially if money already has been transferred. But from our perspective, however, the correct way to look at a transaction is that it's the item itself. Once that passes hands from the mocher to the lokeach, then and only then has the transaction been complete and formalized. Just one more comment before we start with the Mishnah. Property doesn't work this way. Property is acquired through money, but we're not talking about property. We're talking about metalkalin, so that just I want to put that aside. Okay. One more word of introduction, if I may. When we talk about buying an item, so generally speaking, it's pretty clear what the item is and the money that I'm using in order to pay it. Okay, paper money is a modern innovation. From the perspective of the Gemara, money meant coins, minted coins. So, and that's the only thing we get to talk about in the Mishnah, the Gemara, is minted coins. So under normal circumstances, if I'm buying food, it's pretty clear what the item is and what the money is. But what if I'm making a transaction and I'm buying gold? And let's make it even a little bit more complicated. Let's say I'm buying gold coins. Okay. So I'm buying gold coins with silver coins. Okay, so here's a tricky question. What is considered the currency and what is considered the item of transaction? I'm going to familiarize yourself with terms that are going to be coming up again and again throughout this first discussion of the fourth parak of Metziah. So in terms of currency, currency is called tiva. Okay, Tesbe Zayin. We'll see the Gemara is going to throw around these terms. And in terms of the commodity itself, the commodity is called Pera. Now, Pera means fruit, but it means anything which is a commodity. So what we're going to be now learning together in the Mishnah is that under most circumstances, we know what the currency is and we know what the commodity is. But under certain circumstances, which we're about to discuss, it's going to be a little bit confusing what the currency is and what the commodity is. And basically, what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to come to a working definition of what currency is. We're not going to do that immediately. We'll do that a little bit later this morning when we get to the Gemara. But that obviously is where we're headed to. We have to wrap our head around the idea of what really is the definition of currency. Okay, with that stated, let's start with the Mishnah. Now we're in the first Mishnah of the fourth parak of Metziah, Hazav Kones HaKesef. So gold acquires silver, and that means the following. So we are now doing a transaction. I'm buying gold from you. Now the way I even formulated is kind of already, I'm giving away the answer. I'm buying gold from you. And not only that, I'm buying gold coins from you. So, and I'm going to pay you with silver coins. What is the currency and what is the commodity? So the Mishnah says very clearly, the silver coin is a currency and the gold coin is a commodity. How is the Mishnah telling us this? It's very simple. Gold acquires the silver, which means that once the gold transfers from one party to another, the sale is finalized. And like I said in the introduction, when is the sale finalized? When the commodity is being transferred from one to the other. So when the Mishnah says that when that gold acquires silver, that means that once the gold passes hands, acquisition done. Now again, the person with the silver, obviously he has to pay. But the point now is that we are at the point of no return. Okay. And then the Mishnah says, and this point is obvious now, but the Mishnah says that silver does not acquire gold. Meaning that in the same transaction, if the silver coins are being passed from one to the other, well, the silver coins are just currency. It's not the commodity. And therefore, the sale has not been finalized. Bronze acquires silver. Meaning that, again, we're talking about coins. We're talking about a bronze coin and we're talking about a silver coin.
It's copper.
I'm sorry, copper. Thank you. The copper acquires copper acquires silver, but silver does not acquire copper. And again, now, it's basically telling us, the Mishnah is very clear in telling us that the silver coin is the currency. And relative to gold coins, a gold coin is a commodity. Relative to copper coin, a copper coin is a commodity. Okay. Interesting, by the way, the Mishnah does not contrast copper and gold. Okay, just it puts silver squarely in the middle and squarely as a currency. Let's say I'm buying antique coins. Antique coin. Now I say antique, by the way. Back in the good old days, currencies were not current that long. In other words, when you had a change of rulership. Good day to describe that. So when you have a change of rulership, so he would mint new coins. Yeah, I could see that happening. So the he would mint. Just entertaining myself. he'd mint new coins and the old coins obviously become dysfunctional and out of use. So Maus Raus Konos is a Yafos. So now same basic idea. So relative to one another, the old coin is considered a commodity. The new coin is considered the currency. And therefore, when you are doing a transaction of an old coin and a new coin, once you take the old coin, sale finalized. And then Ayafos in a coin says Aros. And obviously the reverse doesn't work. Meaning that if I'm buying an old coin and I give him a new coin, what I give him is a currency that doesn't finalize the transaction. Asimon Kones Amadbeva Amadbeva no Kones Asimon. At this point in the Mishnah, this part seems to be super obvious. And that is, now in Asimon, I'm going to go like Rashi. His grandson argues with him, but I'll stick with Rashi. And Asimon is simply a slug. Now, if you don't know, that's an old term. Basically, it's a cylindrical, it's a circular. It looks like a coin. It's just simply not minted. So when you are buying an asimon, so basically it's metal that's not minted. So that's considered the commodity. The minted coin is considered the currency. And so, same basic idea. So if we're having a transaction, so when I take the asimon, sale finalized, because that was a commodity. If I give him the money, the minted coin, sale not finalized, because I give him the currency. Metalton konas amadbeh, amadbeh no konas amatalton. And then the Mishnah becomes, at this point in time, super obvious. And that is that if I'm buying any commodity, so if I take the commodity, I've now acquired, the other parties acquired the money. Right. Because that's a commodity. On the other hand, if I take the coin, I haven't acquired the commodity. Okay, good. In other words, right at this point in time now, the Mishnah started off with the trickiest subjects and then moved into the more obvious subjects. Good point. I don't know. Kol ha-metalklin kon ezeh. All items can acquire one another. And that means as follows. Rashi, bein b'toras chalipin sheichlev elu be'elu kem shemash achecha kana chaver shelo. So Rashi says we can understand this Mishnah one of two ways. One, a barter, a traditional barter where I'm paying for an item not with money, but we're swapping. We're swapping items. So when swapping items, so at what point in time have we hit the point of no return? The answer is really simple. Once one commodity has gone over to the other, That's it. Sale finalized, or I should say, barter finalized. Rashi then goes on to say, "Bei mitaros damin bekama titen liya shalcha bekach bekach v'zechos of armela bekama titen liya shalcha bekach bekach v'nisratzu umashacha echan is kaimu advarim." The or just simply an agreement of a barter. One person pulls on the other, so that also finalizes the sale as well. Okay, so when basically. In both circumstances, Rashi is describing a barter. So in a barter, considering that we are now talking about two commodities being exchanged, the mishicha of one finalizes the sale. Now, I'm sorry. Ketzad, the Mishnah actually goes now through the through an example. If you take fruit and the other person wasn't moshech on the ma'os, you can't retract, because once the commodity passes the hands, the sale now is finalized. But if you gave the currency, that does not finalize the sale, and at that point in time, either party can retract. Aval amru, and as I previewed, but now here's the Mishnah that's saying it. However, they said, meaning the Chazal taught us, the one who extracted punishment from the generation of the flood and the generation of the disbursement, last week's parsha, who asili pare mimisha eno omed b'diburo, the same one, capital O, the same one is going to extract punishment from somebody who makes a verbal commitment and doesn't keep his verbal commitment. Meaning, basically, the Mishnah castigates the person who, even though, from a technical halachic standpoint, if you gave the money, you have the ability to retract, the other party has the ability to retract, but once you make a verbal commitment, you should be keeping your verbal commitment. And the Mishnah says is that even though you could retract, it is best not to do so. Rabbi Shimon Omer Kol Shakesa Biyadu Yadu Al Yona. Rabbi Shimon says that when it comes to power of retraction, only the mocher has the power of retraction, not the lokech. We will discuss later on the position of Rabbi Shimon. Obviously, he disagrees with the Tanakama. Tanakama says is that as long as the commodity has not been taken, either party can retract, and Rabbi Shimon only gives that power of retraction over to the mocher, not to the lokech. Again, we'll discuss that later. So, Rebbe was teaching his son, Rebbe Shimon. Okay, this is fantastic. Rebbe is the editor, the grand editor of our Mishnayos. So we kind of know what he's going to say, but listen to the reaction of his son. This gets interesting. So Rebbe says to his son, Rebbe Shimon, you know, gold acquires silver. Gold is a commodity, silver is a currency, and so once you take the gold, the sale is finalized. So his son says to his father, you know, I've been learning under you for many years, and I have a very clear recollection that when I was younger, when you were younger, so you taught me just the opposite. You told me that silver acquires gold, and now you're telling me that gold acquires silver? So the Rebbe Shimon, the son of Rebbe, was confused because Rebbe himself had a change of heart. And so now what we're going to be doing for the rest of today's daf is we're basically going to try to understand what Rebbe's thought process was when he was younger and what he thought when he was older. Meaning the Gemara is going to give a lot of weight to Rebbe's original position, even though Rebbe turned around his position. And even though the Mishnah is recording the later version of Rebbe in his lifetime, but still the Gemara is going to be spending some time on his earlier thought process. So the Gemara says, now what did he think and what does he think? What did he think versus what does he think? So he thought as follows. When he was younger, he thought that gold was significant and therefore its currency. And this is now the point in the Gemara where the Gemara is trying to wrap its head around the idea of what is the definition of currency. So originally what Rebbe thought was that gold is significant, therefore it's currency. Meaning that significance defines when a coin becomes a currency. And since silver is not as chashiv, is not as significant, so therefore the silver relative to gold is going to be considered a commodity. And the gold is going to be the currency. And as we've discussed now time and again since the beginning of the fourth parak, commodity acquires the currency. However, have a tiva. But then as he got older, so he changed around his position, he saw it like this. Silver is more charif, spicier, so obviously that's not the right definition. Rashi, on the very top of the Amud, yotzei ba'otzav over lasocher. It's what we would describe, or at least in my understanding, it's currency. Meaning it is what is used, what is universally accepted as payment. And since silver is more universally accepted as payment, so therefore even though gold is more significant, it's a more precious metal, but it's not currency relative to silver. So therefore, the charev havitiva, the avidol charev havapera, the kindly perilativa. Okay, so Amar Avashi, I'd like to just do this next part and then we'll conclude for today. Amar Avashi ki al desei mistabra. Truth of the matter is that if you think about it and you read our Mishnah, you know what? It seems more logical what Rebbe posited when he was younger. Why? Because look at the next point of the Mishnah. The Mishnah, after comparing gold to silver, then the Mishnah compared copper to silver. And the Mishnah went on to say that copper relative to silver, silver is a currency, and copper is a commodity. So the Gemara says, because let's consider, if gold and silver, where gold is the commodity, is the currency, and silver is the commodity. Now, that's not what our Mishnah said. But if you understood it that way, then you understand the next point of the Mishnah. Meaning, because the Mishnah now has to make a new point, and that is that gold is a currency relative to silver, but silver is a currency relative to copper. Now I understand both points of the Mishnah. But let's think about this. If silver is currency compared to gold, where silver relative to gold is currency to commodity, so now the Gemara says, what was the next point of the Mishnah? Absolutely superfluous. Because now we're saying is that, oh, and you know, silver is a commodity relative to copper. You got to be kidding me. Meaning if silver is a currency relative to copper, of course silver is going to be currency relative. Sorry. If silver is currency relative to gold, of course silver is going to be currency relative to copper. It's more current and it's more significant. So the Gemara says, no, maybe not. It's the Chsakadat Chamina Hani Priti Biasra Desagi Inu Charifit Tvei Mikaspa Emetive Havai Kamash Malan. And the Gemara says, Gemara Rebuff. The Gemara says, no. Even if silver is currency relative to gold, the Mishnah still has to make the next point. Because you can make the following argument. You know, even though silver is more significant, but copper, everyone's got copper coins. Copper coins are popular. And I might have thought that that popularity would then lead us to conclude that maybe copper is currency relative to silver. So the Mishnah now has to make a secondary point. Silver is currency relative to gold. Silver is also currency relative to copper, notwithstanding copper's popularity. So the Mishnah, so it could very well be that our Mishnah is still reflecting the second version of Rebbe, the second understanding of Rebbe.